Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and in a landmark sex discrimination suit 40 years ago, a group of women sued Newsweek magazine over failing to publish female writers. A lot has changed since then, but women still lag behind men in pay and power. In this week's issue of that magazine, three young female writers reflect on the legacy of that suit and look at how women are faring today in the media and other industries. With us to discuss this are Jessica Bennett, senior writer at Newsweek and one of the co-authors of The Package, and Lynn Povich, one of the original litigants and Newsweek's first female senior editor. She now serves on the board of the International Women's Media Foundation. Jessica, Lynn, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's talk history first. Lynn, the 1970 lawsuit was filed by 46 female Newsweek staffers, yourself included, who said they were prevented from writing for the magazine. What was happening?
Well, the news magazines were created with a segregated group of researchers in which only women were hired to become researchers, the lowest category on the magazine. All of the reporters and writers were men. And women were rarely promoted out of that category, occasionally to reporter, and never promoted to writer, except, I have to say, in my exceptional case, I had been promoted to writer in order to write fashion, because no man wanted to write fashion. So I was actually a junior writer at the time of our suit. But generally, no one could get out of the category.
And relegated to the fashion desk. So what did the suit produce?
The suit produced an agreement. We sued the day that Newsweek came out with a cover story on the women's movement because they felt it was so important to cover it, written by a woman they had to go outside of the magazine to hire to write it. We sued and in March, and in August, on Women's Strike Day, the first Women's Strike Day, we signed an agreement in which Newsweek promised to hire and promote women. And 2 years later, we were so unhappy with how few women were being promoted or hired into these positions that we actually sued a second time.
And?
And that, by then, we were able to use goals and timetables. We asked that a third of the reporters and the writers be women and that a third of the researchers be men in order to integrate that category and show that it was not a woman's category. It was a job. And that a woman become a senior editor by 1975, which was when I was appointed.
Boy, people hardly ever talk about goals and timetables anymore. In that sense, they get you know, knocked as quotas.
They do, but it's legal to talk about goals and timetables and not quotas.
Jessica, fast forward a generation, and here you are, a 28-year-old senior writer. What got you interested in the history?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Brian, because 6 months ago, I didn't even know this suit had happened. And I've been working at Newsweek for a little over 4 years now, and none of my young colleagues had ever heard of the women's suit. So a few of us had been talking about how we were feeling like something wasn't right in the office and talking with our friends and colleagues in other industries, and all sort of having this sense of something's not right here, and maybe sexism still does exist, although much more subtle. So we were just talking amongst ourselves, and we came across this book by Susan Brown Miller, the feminist author, called In Our Time. And in it, there's a chapter on the Newsweek suit. And we were just mesmerized by the descriptions of what it was like back then, and some of it is still so pertinent to today. And so we basically started looking everywhere we could to try to find more information about this. We just couldn't get enough. But it was interesting that, you know, the three writers, didn't really know our history, and that Newsweek hadn't spoken about it, and a lot of the institutional knowledge was gone. You know, we've gone through a lot of buyouts over the years, so the people who'd been there during this suit or remembered it weren't in the office anymore.
So your stories in the magazine talk about how much things have improved. Women make up 39% of the editorial staff, but you also cite some dispiriting statistics in media and beyond. So what's changed and what hasn't, for example?
Right. Well, back during Lynn's time, the women of Newsweek were called dollies, literally. And they were told outright in job interviews that, quote, women don't write here. So nobody would dare say that today. And in that sense, so much has changed. And our staff today, our editorial staff, is 39% female. So there are certainly women walking around the office. But I think there's a sense that there's not a lot of female mentors at the top. We have a female managing director of the Washington Post Company, which owns Newsweek, but we've never had a female editor, and the top six slots at Newsweek are still filled by men. And last year, we published 49 issues, and of those 49 cover stories, all but six were written by men. And if you look at those six, three of them were co-written by men. So really, only three cover stories were written by women. And, you know, we're all young. We're young reporters. We're not necessarily making the case that we should be the ones writing these stories. But it would be encouraging to see more women getting in the magazine.
What do you make of the fact that so few of the cover stories have been by women? Because it's not reflective of the distribution of reporters on the staff.
Right. I mean, I think that a lot of people were dispirited by that. And, you know, I'm not sure. We have a hard time telling exactly who our readership is. But I think that, I mean, I would make the guess that we're probably isolating some of our women readers by, you know, not dealing with some of the things that they're interested in. Not that women are only interested in, quote, female issues like fashion, as Lynn said. But, you know, every once in a while, it's nice to see a story that is not focused on men. And this is not just at Newsweek. You know, this is very typical for media as a whole. I think that NPR actually is much better than most media. But, you know, a study by the White House Project looked at the top 15 intellectual and political magazines, and Newsweek was included in that. And they found that male-to-female bylines were 7-1, so women were outnumbered by 7-1. And I think that's pretty typical across the board.
Listeners, women, older women, younger women, you want to call in and talk about generational change with respect to sexism in the workplace for our two guests, formerly and presently of Newsweek, 212-433-WNYC. And your calls can be from any line of work at all. Anybody from Lynn's generation, anyone from Jessica's generation, call in and talk about how you've seen change in your field and what still needs to change and whether it's even recognized for what it is today, perhaps. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. For Jessica Bennett, senior writer at Newsweek, one of the co-authors of the package on the history and present state of sexism at Newsweek, and Lynn Povich, one of the original litigants of a 1970 suit against the magazine, Newsweek's first female senior editor once upon a time, who now serves on the board of the International Women's Media Foundation. And oh boy, there go our lines already full. So I guess people have to say something about this. So Lynn, is it harder today for women to even recognize sexism? I mean, it sounds like the, you know, Jessica and her colleagues at Newsweek had to be reminded of some 40-year-old history in order to look around themselves.
Well, it's very interesting to me. You know, as I said to Jessica, it just reminds me of what Betty Friedan wrote in 1964 about the problem that has no name at the time, which was that sort of unease of women in mid-20th century America. And, you know, for those of us who are proud to be called feminists, it's sort of amazing to me that women, young women, don't know their own history, don't want to be called feminists, even though on almost every issue you ask them about, they are in agreement with feminist goals. So I'm just always amazed by the fact that, you know, our history, we were lucky we had a movement, a huge social revolution behind us. And I think for young women, I didn't appreciate until I really got to know Jessica and Jesse and Sarah, that, you know, it's hard to be or become a feminist in a post-feminist world where the sex wars are declared over, that, you know, they didn't have this huge social movement. There may or may not be organizations that speak to them, although I know that there are many that certainly want to talk to their generation. And on the other hand, their situation and similarities their situation is so similar to many of the things we were feeling.
And Jessica, there are a few facts in your article that probably really surprised readers. Like, what did you find out about pay discrepancy between men and women at the very beginning of their careers?
Right. Well, I mean, we've all heard the statistic that women still make 77 cents to the male dollar. But a lot of times people say that that's a result of motherhood, of women opting out of the workforce and never really being able to regain their ground. But what our research found was that literally from the moment young women step foot into the workforce, they're making some 20% less than their male colleagues in their first jobs across all fields. And there was a recent Catalyst study that looked at the top tier MBA schools. And recent MBA graduates in their first jobs out of graduate school, women still made $5,000 less than men. So it's, you can't make the argument that this is motherhood, not sexism, if the moment we step foot into the workforce, we're facing this.
Kathleen in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathleen.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for calling us.
You're welcome. I'm a trial lawyer currently. I previously was a nurse, so I went from a female-dominated profession to a male-dominated profession. And I have to say I've been disappointed at the inroads that women have made in both professions, really. Nationally, women only compromise 15% of trial lawyers, which is one of the higher paying areas of law, while we've been around 50% of law school graduating classes for at least a quarter of a century. And I see, you know, I read articles that let me know that even among equity partners of law firms, women are earning less. And as a 60-year-old who saw all the liberating ideas coming out in the 70s, and I had so much hope that things wouldn't be this way by the time I was 60, and then I went into a great profession, and I continued to hope that we'd be seeing more equality than we are now. But I'm disappointed and even more upset because the young women that I see don't seem to be cognizant of what's going on, because it's covert now instead of blatant.
Kathleen, as a lawyer, let me ask you this. What Jessica was just describing, where people start out in basically the same jobs but for different pay, that's illegal now, isn't it?
Well, if you know about it, I suppose it would be, yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Maybe there's another... This is not what your editors want to hear, Jessica. Maybe there's another lawsuit to follow up on the 1971.
I don't think we want to go there, but the one thing I will say is that I think the fact that we're having this conversation and that Newsweek was willing to publish this story about itself in its own magazine shows the lengths they're willing to go to.
Andrea at the Newark Airport, you're on WNYC. Andrea, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. My question is, what is the mechanism of this inequality? Is that women are not sending the same number of articles, or are they getting turned down, or are they not being asked to send articles in, and what are the mechanism and what can we do to change it?
Jessica and Andrea, let me ask you to go a little further, because it sounds like maybe you're a little skeptical of accepting these claims of inequality on face value, yes?
Oh, no, I agree. The industry I'm in has less than 2% of women, so I totally agree with it. But I want to know what the mechanism is so we can figure out what we can do about it.
All right. Jessica, any thought on that?
Well, I mean, I think we have to talk about it. This has certainly raised consciousness in our own place of employment at Newsweek. People are talking about this. Editors are looking into it. They immediately reacted. They published this piece in their magazine. And I think it shows that they're willing to make change. And I hope that, you know, as the rest of the media sees this and other industries get to talking, hopefully this will keep going on. I mean, one thing I was going to add in relation to the last caller's message was that with progress comes higher expectations. And in some ways, my generation and this generation of young women has very high expectations of what we should accomplish and how we should be treated. And along with that, I think we didn't really expect to face any of these issues. So we out-excelled our male peers in high school and college. We excelled in every way imaginable, and we always thought that the fight had been won. We were equal, so why did we even need to think about feminism or call ourselves feminists or talk about any of this? And we didn't really learn about the women's movement in school, and then suddenly we entered the workforce, And we started noticing this. And because we'd never dealt with these issues or talked about them, we almost didn't even know how to identify them or call it sexism.
Philomena in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philomena.
Hi, good day. I've been managing a law firm for over 30 years, and I'm a woman in my 60s, and so I was coming up in the 70s as well. And I can say that filling out the New York State Disability Reporting that's required annually, there's been very little change. I completed it yesterday. If you have a male employee, you pay $3.75 as an employer, and a female, $8.15.
You mean for disability insurance?
Yes, so that this is an annual reporting event. And this has basically not changed. This incredible disparity has not changed over these some 30 years that I've been completing this form.
Why do you think that disparity exists?
I suppose they, you know, if women are going out on pregnancy leave or something, or they just, I think the mentality hasn't changed all that much in that female employees are not as strong as males and therefore may take more time off or be out. I mean, even secretaries, I have an article back from, you know, they were talking about secretaries in the 1800s. You were not permitted to be a secretary if you were female. It was only males that were permitted to be. So it's an interesting, I mean, I've seen some change, but certainly not enough. And filling out that form yesterday was very aggravating.
Yeah. Lynn, you want to get in on this?
Well, I think that speaking about how to change and the mechanisms for change, that is a sort of legal situation. I'm sure it's based on all sorts of tables within the insurance business and all sorts of things. But I think that in general, the big problem that we certainly didn't anticipate and that continues today is changing the corporate culture. And, you know, you can have the laws, but as they say, you can litigate the laws, you can't litigate the attitudes. And so I think when we were there, the reason that we were able to make change was the editor-in-chief of Newsweek was a very progressive man who, once he was completely shocked by this, and he also had three daughters, really made the editors under him change. It took a while, but he did it. I do think it comes from the top, and I think if you don't have the right kind of men and the right kind of women who are committed to equality and who are willing to shake the culture up, no matter what you do, you're going to have this problem. And so I think, as Jessica said early in the show, you know, there are not that many people who are mentoring these women. We, in our generation, had male mentors, and many of the men supported us and helped us, and I think that's really important. It can't just be women, but you certainly need to get the right women in there who are committed to, you know, equality.
We'll continue in a minute with Lynn Povich, Jessica Bennett, and your calls, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My guests are Jessica Bennett, a senior writer at Newsweek, and Lynn Povich, one of the original litigants of a lawsuit by Newsweek female staffers against the magazine back in 1970. She then became their first female senior editor. She's now on the board of the International Women's Media Foundation. Newsweek is taking the somewhat brave step of revisiting sexism in its own history in those couple of lawsuits that were filed back then, and also inspecting its own workplace for equality of the sexes today. Jessica's 28 years old, and do you think, I mean, it's almost cliche to ask this question, and some listeners are going to go, oh, this again? But does the workplace still give women mixed messages like be a go-getter, but don't be bossy, be a little sexy, but not too much? You know, you reported on a Girl Scout study even that you mentioned in the piece that goes to these things.
Yeah, I think that absolutely the culture and the workplace gives those mixed messages. And I think specifically for our generation, those messages are stronger than ever. You know, we've grown up in this very sexualized culture, and we've watched people like Hillary Clinton attacked for her looks and attacked for being pushy and strident and whatever other name you want to call her, shrill. And I think it's very hard to navigate the modern workforce. You know, we want to stand up and demand higher wages and demand equality, but we don't want to be seen as pushy. And the Girl Scout study you mentioned, they surveyed girls, I think, from 12 to 17. And these young girls said, who are leaders in every other element of their life, said that they feared taking on leadership roles because they didn't want to be perceived as bossy. And young women are four times less likely to negotiate their first salary. And as a Harvard study showed, that's actually for good reason, because women who ask for more money when they're negotiating a salary are perceived as less nice, pushy, and less likely to get the job. So I think it's very complicated. And then on top of that, the whole sexual element of, do you use your sexuality? Do you hide all semblance of feminine traits, especially when your bosses are all men? How do you deal with these issues?
So, Lynn, what do you do on the board of the International Women's Media Foundation, and what issues do you focus on primarily now?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we train women journalists around the world in two things. We train them in journalism skills, but we also train them in leadership skills, exactly what Jessica was just talking about. I mean, we find that women journalists, wherever they are, and often they're not in as good situations abroad as they are in the U.S., need leadership training to put themselves forward, to ask for their raises, to negotiate with their managers, to manage up and to manage down, and to read budgets and to understand the business. And we conduct leadership training all over the world.
We're going to get one of your sources in here as our last caller, I think. Barbara in Manhattan. Hi, Barbara. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks so much, and thanks so much for running the show.
Sure.
One of the things that I wanted to mention is, while I think Jessica and Jesse, one of the co-writers, did an absolutely magnificent job in talking about sexism in Newsweek, what I've discovered in my work is that sexism is in very subtle, pervasive, but dominant forms, making, you know, it's kind of like the new comeback kid in America. And we've seen it in every profession. We've seen women losing positions when they get pregnant. There was an attorney on before who said, you know, certain things were against the law. Well, women are being fired all over the country when they're pregnant. That, too, is against the law. The National Education Association is tremendously concerned about losing numbers of women in the STEM courses, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, for the first time since 1918.
Why would it be going backwards? And you're going to be our last word on this, Barbara. We have about 20 seconds for your answer. Why would it be going backwards if women like Jessica are growing up assuming they can do whatever they want?
They should be able to assume that they can do, but that's not going backwards. What's going backwards, what I've discovered in my book, Sexism in America, is that they think they can do everything that they want and should have that feeling.
Yes, that's
my point.
And then
they are slammed against the reality of gender discrimination in the workplace.
And if I could just jump in here very quickly, I think that, you know, in the face of a huge recession, in the face of two wars, in a post-9/11 America, in some sense, there are bigger problems going on right now, so why are we still talking about sexism? I think that's
the view. But Jessica, I think that those problems that we face as America are also responsible for the return of sexism in America. So I think the two go hand in hand.
Barbara, thank you for your call. And
thank
I want
you
to
so
thank
much.
Again Jessica Bennett, senior writer at Newsweek, and Lynn Povich, one of the original litigants of that lawsuit against Newsweek in 1970, which is revisited in the current issue. Thank you both. Good luck to both of you.
Thank you,
Brian.
And listeners, in case you're interested, I'll be talking about New York politics on television tonight as part of the New York One Reporters Roundtable. That's around 7:30 and 10:30 tonight on New York One. Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowd, and Alan Smith produced this program. We had intern help today from Chuni Chin and Amanda Reisman. Our Help Wanted editor is Annie Schreffler. Our 10 Questions That Count editor is Valerie Lipinski. And our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the Audio Controls. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer.